The second chapter of Matthew's Gospel is a part of the Christmas story which tends to restore to us a sense of the reality of the occasion when the Christ child came into the world. It was not all sugar and spice and all things nice with fairies and spangles and all that sort of thing. Babies were massacred because he had come. And I want to set the story, this terrible story of the massacre of the innocent, into its proper background and a proper spiritual setting, for in fact what Herod did at Bethlehem to the baby boys, it does not stand alone in spiritual history. And in fact, the killing of the babies is part of a much larger story of how the devil, from the very dawn of history, and in fact from the Garden of Eden, has tried to prevent the birth of Christ and has tried to extinguish those who were the ancestors of the coming Messiah. And it would be fun, if it weren't so serious, just to go down through history and see what the newspapers were saying about certain terrible events involving killings and attacks on the royal line of Judah and David and all that. It would be interesting to contrast what the newspapers would have said about these incidents and then go behind the scenes to see what the real spiritual history was. Because, you see, there is always a history behind the history. What you see with your eyes on the television is just visible history. There are visible wars and conflicts that one can see with one's eyes. But beyond that, there is another history being acted out. And this history behind the history, the war behind the war, is a history that is founded on the monumental hatred of Satan for Christ. The evil one lives to hate Christ. He hates Christ and he hates Christians. There is no love in him whatsoever. And so from the earliest dawn of the promise of a Savior, you have attacks on what the Authorized Version calls the seed royal. Because from the garden down to the coming of Christ, there is a golden thread, the thread that is leading to the Messiah through all the Old Testament promises and through the royal line of Judah, through David and Solomon and Rehoboam and the kings of Judah. There is a golden thread. And at every significant point in spiritual history, the devil comes in like one of the fates, with a dread shears, and tries to cut the line that leads to Jesus Christ. This is a fascinating study. Now I'd like to dip into one or two places in the scriptures where these attacks on the seed royal are seen, and then finish it off by lifting it all into New Testament terms. And of course, the first attack comes in the Garden of Eden. Will you turn to Genesis, please? This is the real meaning of the murder of Abel by his brother Cain. Genesis, in chapter 4. And I suppose the newspapers, if there had been newspapers in the Garden of Eden, would have said, brother slays brother in field. But that's not the real news. The real news is that the devil has come in with his scissors. And even at that early juncture, you see, the first promise of a Savior has been made in this very garden. Seed of the woman shall bruise the serpent's head. And as soon as the devil hears that, he takes out his scissors and tries to snip the line that leads to Christ. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man. You notice that Cain is the older of the two. I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. The help of Adam too, of course. But with the help of the Lord, she puts it into a spiritual context. And again, she bore his brother Abel. Now you see the difference between the two boys. Abel was a keeper of sheep, the pastoral type, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. He was a farmer. And in course of time, and here is the difference between the two boys, you see, because I believe, you see, that Adam and Eve taught their children this truth, that you can only come to God through blood. You can only come to God through the life of another. Through a lamb or an ox or a bullock or something else, but the life of another, or of course your own life, but that's not acceptable to God, you see. Now I believe, you see, that after the sin in the garden, the children were taught this, the two boys were taught this, but Cain thinks, you see, you can come to God any old how. What's he going to give God? Oh, a handful of vegetables. Some potatoes maybe, some cabbages, That's good enough for God. There are church people who live like that. The dregs for God. Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. But there's no blood, you see, in cabbages or potatoes. And Abel brought of the firstlings of his flock. Can't get to God except by blood and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. How do you come to God, my friend? Do you come in your own strength and with your own gifts, with your cabbages and your potatoes? The only way is through the blood of someone else. The Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard, and so Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. The Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it. But Cain wouldn't listen. Cain said to Abel, his brother, let us go out to the field. And when they were in the field, here's the scissors, for the first time in history, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. The Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? Notice it was the first murderer who asked that question. And the Lord said, what have you done? First murder in creation. The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. You see, the devil's first stroke in the prevention of the birth of Christ. And I could well believe, you see, that when the next child is born, Seth, in place of Abel, Seth became the father of the Semitic races from which came Abraham, the Jew, Semitic. Jesus was a Jew, you see. I could well believe that when Seth was born, Eve really thought that he was the Messiah, who would sort out all the mess. You can see her joy if you look down to the end of chapter 4 and verse 25. Adam knew his wife again. She bore a son and called his name Seth, father of the Semites. For she said, God has appointed for me another child instead of Abel. For Cain slew him. To Seth also a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. And at that time, there was godliness there, you see, men began to call upon the name of the Lord. First attempt. Queen Athaliah, do you know her story from 2 Chronicles? If we had a great deal of time, we could look at the story of David and Saul. And Saul's irrational hatred for the boy David, because David did him a lot of good, you see. David played the music, and the spirits were charmed. Lots of people would say, you see, that Saul was a man who was mentally ill, and that nowadays we would send him to a psychiatrist. But that's not what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say he was mentally ill. It says he was demon-possessed. He was always tampering and tinkering with that world, the hidden spiritual world. Think of how he ended his life by going to consult the witch of Endor, a medium, wanting advice from the dead, you see, from dead Samuel. And so what happens? The devil uses Saul to try to kill David, throwing the javelin at David. Marvelous story. And it's the devil's scissors trying to snip the line. Here it is again in 2 Chronicles, the great story of Queen Athaliah. What a magnificent witch she was. What a film this would make with Hedy Lamarr and Victor Mature. What a marvelous spectacle for Cecil DeMille. How did he miss it? Handel didn't miss it. He wrote an opera called Queen Athaliah. This magnificent woman, like a Jezebel. And you know what she tried to do? She tried to murder everyone with the blood of David in his veins. The seed royal. She massacred the royal house. And the blood of David was only miraculously preserved by someone who stole away an infant child of the royal seed. It's a great story, this. Chapter 21 of 2 Chronicles. I beg your pardon. Is that what you were waiting for? Now, you see, before she becomes the queen mother, in chapter 22, there's a kind of sordid little history at the end of chapter 21. Let's read from verse 16. Jehoram, that's Athaliah's father-in-law, the Lord stirred up against Jehoram the anger of the Philistines and of the Arabs, who are near the Ethiopians. And they came up against Judah and invaded it and carried away all the possessions they found that belonged to the king's house, and also his sons and his wives, so that no son was left to him except Jehoahaz. And after all this, the Lord smote him in his bowels with an incurable disease. In course of time, at the end of 2 years, his bowels came out because of the disease, and he died in great agony, and everyone recognized that the man was under judgment. His people made no fire in his honor, that's a sacrifice at the funeral, like the fires made for his fathers. When he was 32 years old, he was 32 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem, and he departed with no one's regret. What a thing to say about the king. He departed with no one's regret. and they buried him in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the kings, because he was under judgment. And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, that's the other name for the boy, his youngest son, king in his stead. For the band of men that came with the Arabs to the camp had slain all the older sons. And so Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. Ahaziah was 42 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Athaliah. She's the witch. The granddaughter of Omri. You know the story of Omri? Ooh, a bad lot. One of the kings of the northern kingdom. Omri, rotten to the core. Ooh, a bad apple. A poisonous fellow. And here's his granddaughter, and somehow she is now the queen mother of the southern kingdom. And she's got ambition. What a marvelous woman. She had style. She was rotten. But my, she had style like Jezebel. You know, Jezebel was a baddie. But my, she had style. Do you know what she did before she went down to hell? She went away and had a perm and painted up her face. She wanted to go to hell like a queen. Rotten, but style. And look at this lady, Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, northern kingdom, for his mother was his counselor in doing wickedly. Could you believe that such words are in the Bible? She taught him how to be bad. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, as the house of Ahab had done. For after the death of his father, with the bowel disease, they were his counselors to his undoing. He even followed their counsel and went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, the king of Israel in the north, to make war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians wounded Joram, the northern king. And that was the downfall of Ahaziah, as we'll see. 7, verse 7. It was ordained by God that the downfall of Ahaziah, remember, the mother is pouring the poison into this fellow, that the downfall of Ahaziah should come about through his going to visit Joram, who's been wounded. For when he came there, he went out with Joram to meet Jehu, the son of Nimshi, whom the Lord had appointed to destroy the house of Ahab. And when Jehu, the man of vengeance, was executing the judgment of God on the house of Ahab, he met the princes from Judah in the south, and the sons of Ahaziah's brothers, who attended Ahaziah, and he killed them. He searched for Ahaziah, and he was captured while hiding in Samaria, and he was brought to Jehu and put to death. They buried him, for they said, "He is, after all, the grandson of Jehoshaphat, who sought the Lord with all his heart." And the house of Ahaziah had no one able to rule the kingdom. Don't you believe it? The queen mother's there. What does she do? Now when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the royal family of the house of Judah. Why did she do that? Because Satan hates Christ. And he will do anything to prevent the birth of Christ, not simply into the world, but into any man's heart. If you are here tonight and you're not a Christian, and you're finding it a struggle becoming a Christian, I'm assuming that you're seeking earnestly, this is why there's a struggle going on in your heart. Because the devil hates Christ to be born into the world, into anyone's life. She destroyed the royal family of the house of Judah. But Jehoshabeth, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, a baby, and stole him away from among the king's sons, this baby with the royal blood in his veins. What a great story. Cecil DeMille, why did you miss it? She put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. And so Jehoshabeth, the king, the daughter of King Jehoram, and wife of Jehoiada the priest, because she was a sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah, so that she did not slay him, and he remained with them 6 years, hid in the house of God, while Athaliah reigned over the land, the queen mother, the tyrant. And oh, it's a great story. She comes to a sticky end in the next chapter. Oh, what a woman. I was going to say, if she'd been converted, she would have made a rare minister's wife. Really. Somebody with style and drive and power and energy. Somebody who could organize. Absolutely marvelous. But alas, she wasn't saved. 23 and verse 12. When, you see, the boy grows up, you see, and a little crowd supporting the baby king, they come into power, you see, and they are determined to catch Athaliah. And when Athaliah, verse 12, heard the noise of the people running and praising the boy king, she went into the house of the Lord to the people. And when she looked, there was the king, standing by his pillar at the entrance, and the captains and the trumpeters beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoicing and blowing trumpets, and the singers with their musical instruments leading in the celebration. And Athaliah rent her clothes. Oh, Cecil DeMille, how could you miss it? And cried, "Treason! Treason!" Then Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains who were set over the army, saying to them, "Bring her out between the ranks. Anyone who follows her is to be slain with the sword." For the priest had said, "Do not slay her in the house of the Lord." And so they laid hands on her, and she went into the entrance of the horse gate of the king's house, and they slew her there. But the devil's not finished. Chapter 35, the next attempt, the slaying of King Josiah. Chapter 35, reading from verse 16, the best king who ever sat on the throne of Judah, and the devil got him. Verse 16. So all the service of the Lord was prepared that day to keep the Passover and to offer burnt offerings on the altar of the Lord according to the command of King Josiah, the best one who ever reigned, and the leader of the great revival. And the people of Israel who were present kept the Passover at that time and the feast of unleavened bread 7 days. No Passover like it had been kept in Israel since the days of Samuel the prophet. It was like an old Highland communion. Great occasion. All the people there joining in. No Passover like it had been kept in Israel since the days of Samuel the prophet. None of the kings of Israel had kept such a Passover as was kept by Josiah. Think of the Passovers the Lord's Supper at the Cambus Lang Revival. You can still go to Cambus Lang, and by courtesy of the National Trust, there's an official notice directing you to the preaching braes. That's where Whitfield and the ministers at Cambus Lang led the great Cambus Lang Revival, and the communions were something to be seen, sometimes over 3,000 people taking communion on the preaching braes at Cambus Lang. Great spectacle, absolutely wonderful. No Passover like it had been kept in Israel since the days of Samuel the prophet. None of the kings of Israel had kept such a Passover as was kept by Josiah, and the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel who were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah, this Passover, unforgettable, was kept. And it's just as well it was unforgettable, for see what happens. The scissors. After all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, the king of Egypt, Pharaoh Necho, went up to fight at Carchemish, one of the great battles in world history. It was a turning point in the history of the world, the battle of Pharaoh Necho up at Carchemish on the Euphrates, and Josiah went out against him. There was no need for it, you see. Can you see the man? Pharaoh is racing up the Palestinian coast, and he's not interested in Josiah. Josiah's nothing. He's just small fry. Pharaoh is interested in the big stuff up at Carchemish. But in an act of madness, King Josiah left Jerusalem and tackled Pharaoh. What a mistake it was. 21. But Pharaoh sent envoys to him, saying, "What have we to do with each other, king of Judah? There's nothing between us. I am not coming against you this day, but against the house with which I am at war. And God has commanded me to make haste. Cease opposing God who is with me, lest he destroy you." Nevertheless, Josiah would not turn away from him, but disguised himself in order to fight with him. He did not listen to the words of Necho from the mouth of God, but joined battle in the plain of Megiddo, the plain of Esdraelon, up in the north. And the archers shot King Josiah, the godliest man. And the king said to his servants, "Take me away, for I am badly wounded." So his servants took him out of the chariot and carried him in his second chariot and brought him to Jerusalem. He died and was buried in the tombs of his fathers. All Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. Jeremiah also uttered a lamentation for Josiah. And all the singing men and singing women have spoken of Josiah in their lamentations to this day. They made these an ordinance in Israel, never to forget this king. Behold, they are written in the book of Lamentations. You see, it was an act of folly, moved by the devil, who wanted to snip the line that was leading to Christ. And lastly, in Revelation chapter 12, John goes behind the newspapers and he sees the real meaning of such a history. One, of course, could find it in the life of Christ, the temptation in the wilderness, you see. Become a popular preacher, become a social worker, turn the stones into bread and feed the hungry, jump from the pinnacle of the temple, do something spectacular, and you'll get the crowds, the scissors. Even on the cross, you see, getting the people to offer Jesus drugged wine so that he would die all confused and muddled and his mind would all be fuzzy. And he couldn't have saved us dying like that, you see. Jesus wouldn't drink it. It's the devil trying to extinguish the life of Christ. Here it is, lastly, in Revelation chapter 12. And a great portent appeared in heaven. A portent is a sign with a meaning. Something with a meaning. And a great portent appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and with the moon under her feet and on her head a crown of 12 stars. Now this woman is first of all the nation of Israel, great with Christ, travailing till Christ, who was Israel's fruit, is born into the world. The nation of Israel travailing until Christ is born. But the woman is also the Christian church, because the church travails and is in anguish until Jesus Christ is born into people's hearts. She was with child, and she cried out in her pangs of birth in anguish for delivery. And another portent appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon. You see, there is history behind the history. Seven heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems upon his head. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven. Sometimes stars are used symbolically of angels. I think these are the angels who followed Lucifer when he rebelled against the throne. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to bear a child, Israel traveling, the church traveling, that he might devour her child when she brought it forth. The scissors, the royal line. And she brought forth a male child, one who is to rule all the nations. The Greek says to shepherd the nations. One who is to shepherd the nations with a rod of iron. But her child, this is the ascension, was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness. Verse 7, back into eternity, the news behind the news. Now there was war in heaven, spiritual war, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon. The dragon and his angels fought, but they were defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent, Garden of Eden, ancient serpent, who is called Diabolos and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of the brethren, the devil with the long finger, has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And they, the saints, have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb, the death of Christ, by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Rejoice then, O heaven, and you that dwell therein. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. Why do I say these things on Christmas Eve? For this simple reason, that anyone who is determined to follow the Christ child from the cradle, through his life, through his death, through his resurrection, will automatically become a point of interest for the evil one. A man who does not know Christ is of no interest to the devil. He already belongs to the devil. He is already part of Satan's kingdom. But as soon as the Christ life is born into a man or a woman, all hell is interested. Scissors, he'll do anything to stop the life of Christ. And what's true about a man's life is also true about churches. Churches without Christ are of no interest to the devil. Dead ministers, dead sermons, dead office bearers, dead members, dead singing, dead faces, dead eyes. The devil is not interested in churches like that. They are already part of his kingdom. But as soon as the life of Christ is born into a church, and as soon as a church comes alive for Jesus, all the devils in hell reach for the scissors. And if they can't stop the life of Christ being born in a church, then they'll make the life of that church a misery. They can spoil Christians. They can rob you of your joy, of your peace. They can rob you of your fruitfulness. So, friend, if the devil doesn't bother you, start asking yourself questions. Do you know him at all, capital H? Do you belong to him, capital H? Is that why the devil doesn't bother with you? Are you his, capital H? If he does bother you, then lift up your hearts. You know what Jesus said? Rejoice and be exceeding glad. If the devil's after you, if he torments you, my friend, it's a good sign. You know why it's a good sign? It's a sign that the life of Christ is in you. The life that he hates. You see, it's not you he's interested in. Excuse me, you won't be offended if I tell you that you're very small fry in the devil's eyes. So am I. You see, he's a magnificent being. If he came in just now, he might think he was God. He's so marvelous and still is a magnificent being. Even in his fallenness, his power is tremendous. It's not limitless, but it's very great. You're small fry. Cheer up. If he's interested in you, it's a sure sign that Jesus Christ has been born in you. Amen. May God bless the message to our hearts.